Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 5, The Demigod's Appeal to the Lord, Text Number 43. Dravyam vaya karma guna vishesham. Yad yoga maya vihitan vedanti. Yad dhur vibhavyam. Prabhavuddha palabdham. Prasidatam nasamaha vibhutihi. Dravyam. The five elements of the material world. Vayam. Time, karma, fruit of activities, gunan, the three modes of material nature, vishesham, the varieties caused by combinations of the 23 elements, yat, that which, yogamaya, by the Lord's creative potency. Vihitan, all done. Vedanti, all learned men say. Yat dorbibhavyam, which is actually extremely difficult to understand. Prabuddha apa. Papadam, rejected by the learned, by those who are fully aware. Prasidatam, may be pleased. Naha, upon us. Saha, he, Mahavibhutihi, the controller of everything. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. All learned men say that the five elements, eternal time, fruit of activity, the three modes of material nature, and the varieties produced by these modes are all creations of Yogamaya. This material world is therefore extremely difficult to understand, but those who are highly learned have rejected it. May the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the controller of everything, be pleased with us. Purport. The word Dora Bibhavyam is very important in this verse. No one can understand how everything is happening in this material world by the arrangement of the Supreme Personality of Godhead through His material energies. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita 9:10, Maya Dakshena Prakriti Suyate Sacharacharam. Everything is actually happening under the direction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This much we can learn, but how it has happened is extremely difficult to understand. We cannot even understand how the affairs within our body are systematically taking place. The body is a small universe, and since we cannot understand how things are happening in the small universe, how can we understand the affairs of the bigger universe? Actually, this universe is very difficult to understand. Yet learned sages have advised, as Krishna has also advised, that this material world is dukhaliyam ashasvatam. In other words, it's the place of misery and temporality. One must give up this material world and go back home, back to the Personality of Godhead. Materialists may argue, if this material world and its affairs are impossible to understand, how can we reject it? The answer is provided by the word Prabuddha Pabadam. We have to reject this material world because it is rejected by those who are learned in Vedic wisdom. Even though we cannot understand what this material world is, we should be ready to reject it in accordance with the advice of the learned persons, especially the advice of Krishna. Krishna says, Mam upetya punarjanma dukhalyam ashasvatam napnuvanti mahatmanaha samsidim paramam gataha. After attaining me, the great souls who are learned, who are yogis in devotion, never return to this temporary world, which is full of miseries, because they have attained the highest perfection. One has to return home back to Godhead, for this is the highest perfection of life. To go back to Godhead means to reject this material world. Although we cannot understand the functions of this material world and whether it is good or bad for us, in accordance with the advice of the Supreme Authority, we must reject it and go back home, back to Godhead. Dravyam vayak karmagunan vishesham yad yogamaya vihitan vidanti yadur bibhavyam prabhu dapabadam prasidatam naksamaha vibhutihi. All learned men say that the five elements, eternal time, fruitive activity, the three modes of material nature, and the varieties produced by these modes are all creations of Yogamaya. This material world is therefore extremely difficult to understand, but those who are highly learned have rejected it. May the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the controller of everything, be pleased with us. So Prabhupada explains the word durabhibhavyam here, that material nature is difficult to understand. And he gives the example, just like if we try to understand what's going on inside of our own body, we'd find it extremely difficult to actually have a clear picture of what's going on. We may eat food, and generally we just hope for the best. Of course, it's advised that when we're eating, we should chew the food, and then it's more likely to be successful. And it's, if we actually taste the food, then it's actually going to be more likely to be healthy for us. Although we can find out things by experience, but there's a limit. For instance, going to Ayurveda, that which we can digest is called food. That which we can't digest is called poison. And that which helps us digest food is called medicine. Now, if we eat something and there's no taste, then it's going to be extremely difficult to digest it, because the body can only understand what enzymes and whatever else they say goes into the fire of digestion. Basically, it's fire, air, and a place to burn, and the fuel. But if we don't know what the fuel is that we're supplying, for instance, there are different types of food. Some of them are hot, some of them are salty, some of them are bitter, some of them are sour, some of them are sweet, some of them are astringent. And they have different properties. For instance, if we eat something which is hot, then there's no need for the body to provide a lot of fire to digest it, because the food itself is providing fire. If you eat straight chilies, the body is not going to be inclined to try to provide more fire, because the chilies themselves are quite fiery. As a matter of fact, the body will be inclined to provide more water in the stomach in order to compensate for the fiery nature of the chilies. On the other hand, if one eats a sweet, a glubdiman, generally speaking, the glubdimans are sometimes made with cardamom inside of them, because cardamom has some fire in it to compensate for the extreme sweet of a glubdiman. So the body is not going to be inclined to provide more water or more, but it will be inclined to provide more fire in order to digest the sweet. But if we eat a glubdiman with our nose when we have a cold, and we don't know it's sweet, then the body's not going to know it's sweet either. You can't write a message to the brain and say, my dear brain, we're sending you something sweet. And the brain won't know what to tell the stomach, what kind of enzymes in order to provide to digest it. So how these things are going on, not only people don't know, but they have all the wrong ideas. They don't really care. They don't know that it's more likely to digest the food if you actually chew it. And the reason why we're chewing is we can actually taste it, besides the fact the stomach doesn't have teeth. So it's very hard for the stomach to actually chew the food if we don't. And if we actually taste the food and we digest it, then we're much more likely to assimilate it. And if we don't digest it, then it remains in an indigestible form and becomes toxic. Toxic means that it doesn't become part of the body, so it must be foreign to the body. So anything that's foreign to the body has to get rid of somehow or another. But even that elementary level, people don't even understand, even which is within their realm of perhaps comprehension and experience. Now, we can't experience exactly what enzymes, what chemicals the body is going to send according to the particular taste of the food that we're eating. But we can experience, if we taste the food and it's proper, then we feel better. That's all. The body is healthier. And how do we know when the body's healthy? Well, that's also can be defined. Our senses are working properly. We feel energy. Did you ever eat a meal and after the meal you just feel like going to sleep? Anyone have that experience here? And you look around, everything seems to be swirling around you. So obviously what we just ate didn't exactly help our senses very much. And then when you wake up, the first thing you want to do is go back to sleep. Hibernate for a few days. So we have to understand what the symptoms are so we understand if the body is working properly. The senses are alert, they're sharp, they understand things properly. If they taste something sweet, it tastes sweet. Doesn't taste bitter or sour. When we see something, we can understand how far it is, more or less. We can understand what the proper colors are. So there must be symptoms of how the senses are working properly. How the mind and intelligence, how the intelligence is supplying the proper understanding of what's going on. If we think we're going up when we're actually going down, then there's something wrong with our balance and our intelligence. So these things, we should know at least what's going right and what's going wrong. But generally speaking, we have little idea how things function. And modern scientists don't help us very much because they're all generally atheistic and impersonalist, besides being materialists. And therefore, every description they have has nothing to do with either taste or spirit soul or the supreme spirit soul. It's all atheistic, mechanistic, incomplete understanding. There may be an element of materialism because there is chemicals in this world and Krishna has arranged the material nature to work in a certain way through his different energies. The actual chemicals are earth, water, fire, air, and ether, and mind, intelligence, and ego, false ego, which governs these elements. And above them is the Supreme Person. So there are elements, there are chemicals going on. For instance, fire can digest things, while air can move things. Water can make things more cohesive, or earth has some solidity, some foundation for something. But without understanding how there's a controller behind these things, our knowledge is incomplete. And without understanding ourselves as a soul, what we play in the whole thing, certainly our knowledge is incomplete. Just like I said, we may not understand so very much, but it's not that we can't understand anything. We can understand basic principles that can help us ultimately progress in spiritual life, like how to keep the body healthy. Modern science, materialistic, atheistic, mechanistic science, usually thinks that the body is something to attack. Not the body, but the things inside the body. They want to kill, in order to make the body healthy, they want to poison it to death. They think the body, when it's manifesting some disturbance, you have to stop the disturbance. You have to quell the symptoms. If it has a fever, you have to eliminate the fever. Never the mind that the fever is burning away the impurities that we ourselves created by our irregular lifestyle. It's trying to get rid of the toxins, and modern science is giving us ways to keep them. Here's my prized toxin. I've had it for 50 years now. I haven't been able to burn it or cut it out or slash it or do anything else according to modern science. Therefore, some knowledge is there, but it should be knowledge rather than ignorance. Similarly, the universe, according to the modern mechanistic, atheistic, materialistic science, is just some dead entity. Everything's dead. Just some rocks floating in space. Some of them are on fire, and some of them just like ice cold and just floating around for no purpose. Other than after, when you come out of nothing, then you have nothing to do. Just float around. No God, no purpose, nothing. And this is their view. They say we know everything. But they don't know anything. Just like I read an article many years ago in one magazine. It said we have learned more about the sun than all the other planets and all the universes. We've been studying for 10 years. Unfortunately, we just discovered that everything we found out about the sun was wrong. In the same article, they said, don't worry about it, because now we have positive proof of the possible existence of black holes. So the only thing they're really finding out is how to juggle words to bewilder foolish people. And if you read Sariputta's book, Cosmology, on cosmology, you'll find out that more or less modern science is just a bunch of lies, a bunch of contradictions that they try to cover over in the name of knowledge. Just to give a short example, like there's something called the Doppler effect, that you can understand how far a planet is, or even a universe supposedly, according to the light it's emitting. So they measured all these universes and planets, and they gave us some statistics, how far the planets and the universes are according to the light they're emitting. Unfortunately, they found out that there are supposed universes or planets which have a different color that they're supposed to have, because they're supposed to be further, closer than some universe with a different color. But they found out that that actually universe is in back of the universe that's supposed to be further away. The one that's closer is actually, according to the light it's emitting, is in back, although it should be in front, but actually they see it's in back. So the best way of dealing with it, they figured out, is just to ignore it. If it doesn't fit our expectations, just ignore it. And anyone who brings it up, then just label them a demon. They're unscientific, they're anti-science, They're rocking the boat, kick them out of science. Every time someone finds a specimen in the strata of rock that doesn't fit the scientists' expectations, what they do is they just cut it out. Just ignore it. And anyone who is foolish enough to work in that field, who insists that actually their finding has some merit, will soon find themselves out of a job. In other words, this world is a place of cheaters and the cheated, and when one wants knowledge, he has to go to someone who's not a real knowledge, one has to go to someone who's not a cheater. Now, Krishna Bhagavad Gita, he's told us we're not this body. Now, for the materialists, that's quite a disappointment for most of them. Because if I'm not this body, then my whole life I've been wasting my time serving my senses, and it's not going to get me, the soul within the body, anywhere. I'm just wasting my time serving my senses. So better to ignore that. Just cut that out of the Bhagavad Gita. It's not a very important part. Krishna must have been taking drugs and when he was speaking such nonsense that we're not this body. When he says that he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, it's not so bad because everyone thinks like that. So why shouldn't he think like that too? Everyone thinks they're God, so if he thinks he's God, it's just normal. So then what you're left with is simply nothing. Therefore, anyone who can accept Bhagavad Gita, at least Krishna is saying that we're not this body and that there's a super soul in the heart who's guiding us, and that there's a supreme person, then he becomes more reliable source than all the other so-called scientists with all their degrees, all their honors, and all their so-called reputation. Because at least they have some honesty. They can understand. We may be in illusion to some extent, but we understand that we're at least an illusion. When you're an illusion and you claim you know everything, that's even a bigger illusion. It's bad enough to be an illusion, but when you're an illusion and you think you know everything, that's the biggest illusion you can be under. So at least if someone's under an illusion, they know they're under an illusion, they have that much knowledge. And if they repeat someone's knowledge, which is someone who's not an illusion, then they become a reliable source. And how do we know that they're not an illusion? Because they are convinced by realization that they're not their body, that there's the Supreme Lord within everyone's heart guiding every living entity, and that there's a Supreme Person controlling the entire universe. That's actual knowledge. Everything else is just different degrees of illusion. So we may not know how this universe is working exactly, but we don't have to go back to the spiritual world. We just have to accept the authority of those who are not an illusion, and they tell us that this world is meant to serve Krishna. And if we utilize this world to serve Krishna, then our illusion will dissipate. At least we can find out whether it works or not. Otherwise, anyone who thinks that they're this body is working just to serve their senses, certainly that's a dead end. They're not going to go anywhere because their body is going to disappear very shortly. And what will they get for all their service? According to Bhagavad Gita, they'll simply get another body to do the same thing over and over again. So on one side, if one accepts materialism, he's completely lost, working for nothing. Shrama Evi Kevalam. And if one can have some understanding that we're not this body, there is a super soul who can guide us, and that he wants to guide us to serving the Supreme Person, Krishna, and we try it out, then we can see whether our illusion dissipates or not. Whether we gain our memory by his mercy, we're going to understand who we actually are. Our illusion is dispelled. Nashto moha smitira labdva tat prasada maya chuta. Stitas di gatasandeha karishe vachanam tava. So that we have to experience for ourselves. Even after we become self-realized, it's not necessarily we'll understand the whole universe or even how this body's working perfectly. It's not that every tomato we eat that we're going to analyze exactly how it's broken down and becomes our arm and our brain. It's not necessary. It's not that before you go back to the spiritual world, there's a test. You ate a tomato last year, how did it become your brain? Sorry, can't get in the spiritual world. No, all we do is have to know that we're servants of the servants of the servants of Krishna and try to desire to serve Krishna, and that's perfect knowledge. And everything else that we have to know, Krishna will supply to us. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Comments? Avaduta Roy.
Hare Krishna. This is a question from Avaduta Roy Das. Hare Krishna, regarding some previous discussion by you, why Sanjaya was in ecstasy when he saw the universal form? What was the cause of his ecstasy seeing that horrible form?
Because he was completely absorbed in Krishna consciousness. And Krishna is his ecstasy, his bliss. His very body is made out of pure pleasure. So, Arjuna, when Sanjaya experienced Krishna in the universal form, he was seeing him exactly and perfectly in relation to Krishna. Therefore, he was feeling simply transcendental bliss, Krishna's association. Besides that, we would be in bliss also if we had purified senses when we read the Bhagavad Gita. So, since Sanjaya had purified senses, spiritual senses, therefore he could experience this universal form as it actually is. But when we read Bhagavad Gita, because our senses and mind, our intelligence, are covered, therefore we don't experience the same way that Sanjaya does. Yes.
There is another question. Christians have the philosophy, the body and the soul are one. How would you counter this philosophy?
Which body? We've had so many bodies. Which body are they one with? But if they were one with their bodies, disappear already. How can you be the same? If you can remember that when you were 5 years old, where's your 5-year-old body? Disappeared. How could you be one with a 5-year-old body? And you would have disappeared too. You're here. All right. Kala, Grantarai Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.